On the Grindhouse Girls podcast, we discuss all things spoopy, scary, and strange. Some content may be disturbing or graphic in nature. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, Grindhouse Girls friends and fam. When Catherine Bigelow first started her artistic career, she initially was a painter. While exploring other mediums, she fell into film and never looked back. After making a short film, she co-wrote and co-directed her first film, The Loveless, with Monty Montgomery. She then stumbled across a script written by Eric Red. She reached out to him, and he liked her writing style too, so they created a partnership and started writing a spec script. They wanted to create a Western, but in the mid and late 80s, a vampire craze had overtaken Hollywood, so they decided to mix the two and write a vampire Western. They gave the script to producer Ed Feldman on Thursday, and by Monday, they had a start day with Catherine directing.
The resulting film, Near Dark, premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival in 1987 before releasing in theaters in October of that year. The movie received mostly positive reviews, but was largely overshadowed by The Lost Boys being released earlier in July of that year, and made only a little over half of its overall budget back. However, Catherine would get the last laugh. Well, not only would her movie go on to become a cult classic, but she would also go on to become the first female director ever to win the Best Directing Award at the Academy Awards for her film The Hurt Locker, which also went on to win Best Picture. So, listen to the night. Really listen. And try to make it home by sunrise. This is the Grindhouse Girls Podcast.
Hey, it's Katie, and I still sound sick, but I can talk this week.
And hey, I'm Brittany.
I thought I'd get that out of the way, because I know I sound weird right now. I listened to myself on my audio test, and I was like, yeah, that's weird. So, if I laugh, cough, it's okay. I'm on the mend. It's okay. How are you, Britt?
I am okay. I did not have your cough or your voice going out, but I've been sneezing a lot at work. So it's like you just hear the echoes of bless you down the hall every time I sneeze. So
I've gone through so many boxes of tissue in like 2 weeks. I've never been through this much tissue. It is disgusting. Sorry, that's not TMI. I don't know. I have really bad allergies and it has been... Like, I was feeling really good today, and I sounded almost normal, and then I went outside after work, and, like, it triggered, like, a big coughing fit again, and I was just like, okay, what is blooming? I'm gonna punch it. But, you know, it is what it is, I guess. But, yeah, I'm happy that maybe the springtime is, like, the pollen is maybe almost gone, I hope. Oh, God.
Me too, yeah.
You know. It's one thing they don't have to worry about in this movie because there's, like, no pollen in the desert, I guess.
Yeah, that's very true. And before we forget, we said it before, but just so we have it for this episode, this is currently streaming on Criterion. Yes. So that is the only place to watch it right now. And we picked this because it was going to end off, March is obviously Women's History Month, so this was going to be our last episode of March, but poor Katie couldn't speak. So this is going to now be the first episode of April. Yeah, it's okay.
We got on, we tried to delay it a day, and like I got on and Brittany's like, you sound like you're about to cry.
Yeah.
And she's like, if I couldn't see your face right now, I would think you were on the verge of tears. I was like... Fair.
Yeah.
Fair.
Which I have to, as a little bit of the background. So did you watch, it's on YouTube, but it's essentially Catherine Bigelow's On Near Dark, the film school archive interview on YouTube. Did you see that?
I don't know. I saw one where they were interviewing her but they kept like resetting the cameras and stuff.
Okay, it's that one.
It was so weird.
Yeah, so
it seemed unprofessional in my opinion, and like they didn't respect her as a director.
I was about to say it is that one. Yeah, because it was like an 18-minute interview. The questions are a little boring, and yeah, they is like, oh my god, like the I don't know who was like filming the thing, but the camera angles kept going off and everything. It was like the weirdest interview. But she was a class act during the whole thing.
Yeah, she was very calm and collected, but like it was like, I don't know. It's like, and it was her first solo directing, so like obviously she didn't have the name for herself that she has now. But still, it seemed, in my opinion, like pretty unprofessional.
I would agree with that too. And I thought it was really interesting because she was talking about like you, and she's so articulate when she was talking that like I didn't even feel like the interview was as long as it was until I looked at it. And I was like, oh my gosh, she's been talking for a while. But it's like she has a very like soothing voice and she's very knowledgeable and articulate. But something I thought that was really interesting is that she called the vampires in this film. She said they're victims of a violent act themselves. And she's like, they're not killers as much as feeders. And I'm like, okay, I can get that. But then what about Severin? Because Severin feels like a killer to me. Like, he doesn't... It feels like he gets enjoyment out of, like, playing with his food. You know, it's not the same as the others to me.
Yeah, it's a weird setup. I will say, I feel like... I guess that's kind of like the Lost Boys, though, too, is that there's Kiefer Sutherland, right, is the bad one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, he's, like, the bad vampire. But then, like, very much like Lost Boys, the girl vampire... is nice, and she just wants, like, someone to hang out with. I think, like, the weird thing about this movie was, like, how, for me, the dynamic of the quote-unquote good vampire, May, and the lead character, Caleb. I knew it was some generic white boy.
Caleb Colton.
Name to start with a C.
Yeah, Caleb Colton. So it's alliteration.
Caleb and May have like this weird relationship. Like in the and I'm not trying to just compare it to the Lost Boys, but even like the, you know, we re-released an episode on
A
Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, which is also a vampire western, but an Iranian vampire western. And you know, in that movie, you know, the vampire is kind of a vigilante against people, men specifically, but people who attack women in the city. And, but the vampire in A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, she, like, meets her love interest a few times, whereas, same thing in The Lost Boys, he meets the girl in the motorcycle gang, they hang out a few times, and then they have a mutual attraction to each other, right? Before she half turns him into a vampire. And she genuinely seems to not really want to fully turn him into a vampire. She doesn't have to, which is, like, I feel like an interesting dynamic. This movie, though, it's so, like, just off the bat, these people just randomly meet. And, like, you can tell they're both flirting with each other, but, like, he is, like, a pesterer. He is, like, he basically tells her, I'll take you home if you kiss me. And to me... that is coercion and that is gross.
Yeah.
And so I automatically do not like the main character of this movie. And I think it's my biggest problem with it is he's a pester. And I mean, I know it was the 80s and I know he's like younger, but like if a man came up to me and offered me a ride home and then said, only if you give me a kiss, I would like pepper spray his face and get out of the car.
Yeah.
But she does kiss him and then she bites him. Which at first I was like, she's like punishing him for like basically forcing himself upon her. That's an interesting take. Okay, cool. But then like she just like falls in love with him.
Yeah.
And I was like, the dynamics are confusing because I'm like, is she trying to say that like, because she also said that the vampirism is kind of a symbol for drug addiction too. So I'm like, is she trying to say that sometimes people lead other people into addiction? Because they love them and they want them to, like, be with them.
Yeah. Maybe.
I know that does happen. So, I don't know. It's kind of a weird setup. But then you meet the vampires, and I actually like the vampires. Like, they're kind of fun.
I thought it was really interesting because seeing this movie, and especially, like, the character of Homer, because it's essentially a child vampire, but he's a lot older.
Who is played by the little brother from Teen Witch.
Yes.
Which is so funny. Like, I told my friend Elizabeth that. I was like, by the way, the little brother from Teen Witch is in this movie, and he's a vampire. She's like, wait, what? And I was like, yeah. Who's now a screenwriter, by the way?
That is cool.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, you're good. So, but as soon as I saw Homer, I was like, oh, Claudia much. Because as we know, mm-hmm. what Interview with a Vampire, especially in the original novel and the movie, is that Claudia is turned into a vampire when she's 5, but she ages as any woman would, but she's trapped in a 5-year-old's body. And so they do this with Homer's character, but more to like a comedic effect. But then I don't know where I read this at. I feel like maybe it was Bill Paxton had said it at a screening of Near Dark, but he was like, yeah, we were all reading Interview with a Vampire. And I was like, that makes so much sense that, you know, because Interview with the Vampire, mm-hmm. the novel came out in like the mid-70s. So it makes sense right. that they, but this is what's funny, is also you see this movie going on to maybe subconsciously influence Twilight in some ways too.
Yeah.
Especially with the romance and the family aspect of
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Or also, and a little bit with Homer yeah. and Caleb's little sister, because mm-hmm. like he meets her at a hotel. Or a motel, and he, like, obviously wants to make her his companion.
Yeah.
Because she'd be closer to his age. But he's, like, an adult in a child's body, which is problematic. And it made me think of Let the Right One In.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Let the Right One In is very specific that they still feel like a child.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that that's the distinction that makes it okay. Whereas, like, this movie and the Interview with a Vampire is very specific that this... it's an adult trapped in a child's body.
And what's funny about Claudia, too, and at least in the book and in the original film that came out in the 90s, is that Claudia wasn't looking for really a lover. Claudia was looking for a mother that could yeah. take care of her. Now, there was, like, something kind of weird going on with Louis a little bit, which in the TV series, oh, yeah. they definitely make it more like a father-daughter.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, that was a tangent. I really like Interview with the Vampire. But, so I think it was funny. So Catherine was probably about 34 when she wrote the script, which is about our age. And uh-huh. there's parts of it that kind of, to me, read a little bit like a teen romance novel.
Yeah.
Now, granted,
maybe Stephanie Myers took a page out of her book.
I haven't read a lot of scripts from the 80s. I will be honest, but there was points in it, like, I liked it, but there was points in it that were a little goofy to me.
Yeah, definitely.
And there was also things that, like, there was no way that they were going to be able to really do it in the 80s, I think. Because at one point, it's, like, right after Caleb meets with May after he's turned, they're running with, like, a bunch of coyotes in the desert, which sounds really beautiful on paper. But then it's like,
it's not possible.
I don't know how we would have even remotely got there.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was really interesting too.
Also, like, the 80s, it was really, really popular, the Brat Pack movies. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if, like, it was a little bit of that. And, like, the Lost Boys also, like almost all the main characters of, like, big movies that we still watch from the 80s are teenagers or, like, young adults.
Yeah. And Caleb is written specifically, he is 18 in the script.
Yeah. So probably still technically in high school.
Yeah. Either or maybe senior, just like
or maybe newly, he just graduated.
Newly graduated, yeah, would be like my guess.
This movie was one that, like, it is on Bravo's 100 Scariest Movie Moments, number 64.
Mm.
And it's my favorite scene in the movie, which is the bar sequence.
Yeah.
Which I think is the best part of the movie, to be honest. And it's a really well directed and choreographed sequence. But I don't think the rest of the movie quite lives up to it, to be quite frank, because it is very melodramatic, but then it's also, like, fun Western. It's just, like, the tone is very uneven.
Yeah.
And, like, because, like, remember in Blue Velvet when Kyle MacLachlan and Laura Dern are sitting in, like, his car, and Laura Dern just goes off on this melodramatic, like, flowery language tangent, mm-hmm. but there's, like, swelling music, and so you can tell it's kind of, like, wink, wink, tongue in cheek. This is kind of, like, an idealized world,
yeah.
is what, you know, this movie says that, but they don't have the wink wink. And I'm very much like, I don't know if we're supposed to like take these people seriously or not.
Yeah. And I think it also falls into, and we see this a lot with these type of movies where it's like the main characters aren't as interesting as the side characters are.
Yes. The side characters are worth watching.
Yeah.
Honestly. And they're played by like people, almost like half the cast is from Aliens. Mm-hmm. Not Alien, Aliens, which James Cameron directed, who was married to Kathryn Bigelow at the time. Which I thought they were married for a while. They were only married for like a few years. No judgment. I was just like, I remember when she won the Oscar, people were like, oh, she beat out her ex-husband. So I assumed like they had this like long marriage. And I was like, or they just like married for a couple of years. But you know,
yeah.
Marriage is a marriage. It's still a marriage. But yeah, I think she said that if she used actors that had worked in a film prior, they'd have more familial chemistry.
Yeah.
And I think that does work a lot. And I do think it's good that she never uses the word vampire.
Yeah, I like that too. And it's kind of like reminds me how like in The Walking Dead, they never say zombie. And then also right. In Night of the Living Dead, they call them ghouls. So
yeah,
it's almost like they don't really have the word for it. Which another thing, it felt so, I've seen vampire movies older than this movie, but this was one of the first movies I like, well, obviously I saw this for the first time like last week, but like It feels very, obviously vampirism is also like a metaphor for sexuality and sex, but it felt very sexual, like the way like yes, he feeds from
sensual.
Her and very sensual. And that's what, I didn't bring this up, but I did see there was an article called Medium Kathryn Bigelow's Near Dark Busting Stereotypes and Drawing Blood. And someone pointed out that, you know, like you said, Caleb oozes confidence and he plays the dominant when he meets May. But then it's like, you know, once he becomes a vampire, it reverses and it's really, he becomes entirely dependent on May. And yeah. I didn't really.
Almost like childlike.
Yeah.
Or I guess we'll just say dominant submissive, maybe that kind of a relationship,
which
kind of thing.
I like it because, you know, this script was co-written by both a man and a woman. So I think you do see a little bit of the tug and pull there at times.
Yeah. And I will say Karen Kusama. Yep. Costume. I always mispronounce her name. The director of Jennifer's Body and The Invitation. I think it's Kusama. Sorry, Karen. She does an interview on, it's on the Criterion channel about this movie. And she actually saw it at MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art, in Manhattan. And like a pre-screening before it came out in the festivals. And so she was like, I guess she was a film student at the time. And she happened to go see it. And she said it was really interesting because it was just so sensual.
Yeah.
Like the way, and I mean, it is a very sensual movie, but I feel like because the characters are so young, it's kind of like teen romance sensual. Which, if I had seen this movie as a teenager, I probably would have a very different viewpoint than seeing it for the first time as an adult.
Yeah.
I feel like it could have gotten the Twilight crowd.
Yeah.
They would have loved this movie.
And fun fact, this was supposed to be remade in like the mid-2000s. And of course, Twilight, they were just like, oh no. Twilight came out. They're like, there's no way we can compete against Twilight. Even though this movie
they also had fucking True Blood and Twilight, which I prefer True Blood, quite frankly.
I just, I had to write down real quick before I forget. So, speaking of the script, one of the things I wrote down was the silver one gives a glance to the pale one. So they often, during the script, they refer to Jesse as the silver one and the pale one as Diamondback. It's like, it's just like stuff like that. The silver one glances to the pale one. And it's,
it's like, what? Interesting.
It's so kind of goofy.
That does sound a little goofy.
I have so many quotes, but I will say, and I know we're going to veer into spoiler categories, but the script was also a lot more violent in places. So, I mean, the movie was violent, but they honestly, it could have been a lot more violent than it even was.
Yeah, it could have. And it's funny because, like, I remember Googling photos, just looking up for the movie for, like, posting stuff. And, like, a lot of them were, like, blurred out. And they're like, do you want to keep looking at this? And I was like, from this movie? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of blood. But, like, it's not, I don't know. Maybe I'm desensitized to the violence now.
Yeah.
I do think it's funny. Bill Paxton wrote the script first and immediately called Lance Henriksen. And then Lance Henriksen wanted to be Severin. But then he talked to Kathryn Bigelow and was like, I guess I'll be Jesse. And he also, like, Lance Henriksen goes all out, apparently, when he gets a role. He had acrylic nails put on his nails that he then broke with pliers at home. So he would have these, like, creepy broken nails. And he went to, like, Nosferatu, basically. And he lost a ton of weight. She didn't tell him to lose weight. He lost a ton of weight so he would look really bony. But then he ended up pulling a muscle in his back because he lost too much weight too fast.
Oh.
And then he, like, had this whole detailed story about his character as a Confederate naval officer that, like, sirens or harpies saved him. And he sewed a Confederate flag into the inside of his coat, which I did not notice until after we'd seen the movie. And I was like, what? But it's in there. There's, like, a picture of it in the interview. And I was like, okay. But I thought that was interesting that he, like, I never saw the Confederate flag, but then he does say something like, I fought for the South. We lost.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay.
Because Caleb knows, how old are you? Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I guess I can, before we start to get into plot, I'll just do a quick rundown on a few different things. So again, this movie is directed and co-written by Kathryn Bigelow. Once again, she's now kind of known for The Hurt Locker, which won Best Picture and Best Director, first female director ever to win Best Director. She also did Zero Dark Thirty, which I actually got to see that one in theaters with Jessica Chastain. But I thought it was interesting in doing my research about her. So her big thing, she did a short film. So her debut into directing was this short film called The Setup, which is a deconstruction of violence. And it's basically just two men fighting each other as, like, and I actually didn't know what this word was, but semioticians deconstruct the images in voiceover. And the big thing about this is that she actually had the actors beat the actual shit out of each other during an all-night shoot. So it was like a really, so even... Ooh. And, you know, like, my thing is, like, sure, like, women can direct violent films and stuff, but it was, like, basically her foray into film was, like, violence. And not just, like, acting violence, but, like, real violence. So I thought that was really interesting. That's what she started
with. Well, she also, like, a lot of her films in between this and, like, the Zero Dark Thirty and Hurt Locker era was, like, Point Break, Detroit... Well, I guess Detroit was after that. But, and, like, K-19 Widowmaker. Point Break and K-19 Widowmaker are, like, kind of action movies. Not that women can't do action movies, but you hear about them doing them less. So I feel like she's really, like, drawn to action-heavy films. Because, like, The Hurt Locker is a drama, but it's about war. As is Zero Dark Thirty. So I feel like she, like, I don't know. She just must be interested in, like, violence. And the, you know, vicissitudes of it or whatnot.
Yeah, well, it's like, even with this movie, I've read over and over and over again in my research that she wanted to do a Western. And, you know, that's the whole reason it became a vampire Western was because vampires are really marketable. But not once did I ever see that the Western she was planning was like a romance Western. So, yeah. I don't even know if the Western she was planning in her head would have had any romantic elements, or if that came about because of the vampires. I'm not sure.
Like, I almost feel like the romance is probably the cheesiest part of this movie, and it's kind of a second thought, which I think is why I don't really, like, connect with their relationship. I'm just kind of like, why are they even in love? I don't really get it.
Yeah. I don't really... It's like, I don't think the actors are bad actors in the least bit, but I didn't really... feel the chemistry there. Like, I could see them trying, but not...
It feels kind of forced.
Yeah.
I feel like the story could be great if maybe the casting was a little bit different.
I forgot the actress, but I did really like her. I thought she was the best part of the movie. Is
Jenny Wright.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's good. It's not that either one of them is bad. Yeah.
It's funny, with Jenny Wright, who plays May in this movie, though, I actually recognized her. So one of my mom's favorite movies was St. Elmo's Fire. I was like, is she?
Oh, I do love that. Is she in that?
Yeah, she's Billy's wife. So, you know, she's only like in a scene or two.
Which one's Billy?
Rob Lowe. Rob Lowe's character, the saxophone player. Okay. Yeah. But yes, but that's where, as soon as I saw her, but that's the only other thing I've ever seen her in, if I'm being honest, was in St. Elmo's Fire.
Yeah, she's in Young Guns 2, which I have not, I don't think I've seen Young Guns 2. I think I've seen Young Guns, but it's been years. She was also, in Twister.
Oh.
So I know I've seen her in that, because I've definitely seen Twister a few times. And she was also a part in Pink Floyd the Wall and The Lawnmower Man.
Okay.
Which I haven't actually watched Lawnmower Man, but it's been on my list for a while. And then Adrian Pastar is Caleb. He did a lot of, he was in Top Gun.
Yeah.
And he's recently been on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes.
And then we got Lance Henriksen, which we already said. If you don't know Lance Henriksen, he's Bishop in Aliens. And he's also in Scream 3, which I recently rewatched. And I was like, oh, hey, he's in that vampire movie we're reviewing.
Yeah.
And then we've also got Bill Paxton. Rest in peace. I'm so sad that Bill Paxton's dead, because I genuinely enjoyed seeing him in whatever. He's probably he was in Nightcrawler.
Oh, yeah.
He was the other videographer guy. He's also in Frailty, Twister, Aliens, and a show that I love because it's about cults and weird stuff is Big Love, which is about polygamous couple. I was trying to give them the credit of saying you're polyamorous, which is different than polygamy, because polygamy is one man has multiple wives and nobody can fraternize outside of the individual marriages, and polyamory is everybody dates whoever they want and they're just honest about dating multiple people. But you can also be married and date other people, so there are different things, you know. There's a egalitarian version and a non-egalitarian version, and polygamy. There is technically a opposite version where it's one wife and multiple husbands, but it's much rarer. It's a really good little drama show.
Yeah.
There's a lot of the three actresses that play his three wives are fantastic.
I know.
And
It's Chloe. It's Chloe Sevigny.
Chloe Sevigny.
And then Jennifer Goodwin.
Jennifer Goodwin. And
I always forget the third one.
I know her face. Oh, my God, her face. It's a really good show. I think it was on, HBO or Showtime?
Right. I feel like that's right. I never watched it, but my dad watched it. So that's why I remember parts of it.
I've seen the first two seasons. Oh, and what's her face from Mean Girls? Amanda Seyfried plays one of the oldest kids. Jean Triplehorn, who's been in a ton of stuff, but I never remember her name. But you would see her and be like, oh, that lady. But yeah, Amanda Seyfried is one of their oldest kids. And that was her big break before Veronica Mars and then Mean Girls. So if you want to see Amanda Seyfried. And she was in Jennifer's Body.
Yeah.
So so many things. And then Jeanette Goldstein played Diamondback, who's the silver one, who just has dark roots and light hair. She hadn't done she'd only been in Aliens before, and it was only her second movie. But she was also in Terminator 2 and Lethal Weapon 2, so a lot of twos. The little brother from Teen Witch, who plays Homer, is Joshua John Miller. He was also in Halloween 2, Season of the Witch. I think he was one of the little kids. And he's in this terrible movie that I've seen called Class of 1999, which is a really stupid action movie from I think the 90s, and then did a lot of TV, but now he's primarily a writer, and he wrote The Final Girls and the Queen of the South series.
Yes. So. Which reminds me, because this movie was co-written by Eric Red.
Yes.
So he wrote the 1986 film The Hitcher. He wrote and directed Cohen and Tate, Body Parts, 100 Feet, and Bad Moon. And he also wrote Blue Steel, which Catherine directed. Yeah, did you read the big thing that happened with him in the early 2000s?
No, I saw that he had a lot of previous features and he had a comic book, but no, I didn't see anything else. I had a really hard time finding stuff on him.
So I happened to read this on Wikipedia and then I read it because it was I think it linked to the New York Times, but basically he fell asleep at the wheel and crashed into a bar and killed two people and got out of the car and started, guys, I'm sorry, trigger warning, he started trying to unalive himself with a piece of glass.
Oh,
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And so it was like a big thing. And supposedly he had forms of epilepsy, but hadn't reported it. So there's like different things that happened. But the main thing is that some people say he had like a form of epilepsy or like.
Yeah, I had a friend that couldn't drive in college because she got diagnosed with epilepsy.
Yeah, and he would just fall asleep. Yeah. But this is the weird thing. If you guys want to go down this rabbit hole, I think it was his own brother-in-law was like, yeah, but if you fall asleep, how does your foot stay on the pedal to weigh down the pedal to make the car still go? And I was like, that's weird that his brother-in-law.
I mean, but if you didn't move your foot, like, yeah. It would just stay on the pedal. Like, that's how people crash cars, falling asleep at the wheel.
Yeah, I just...
Like, it happens a lot.
I just thought it was, like, a crazy controversy that I'd never heard about.
I hadn't either. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Which, Ryan, crazy. I don't know if that's relevant, if we need to cut it or not. But I did. That was the main thing, other than that little bit of info I had. That was the main thing that I kind of found out about him.
Maybe that's why he hasn't worked as much, because maybe, I don't know, that's terrible.
Yeah. It's really sad. It's really, really sad, because especially if it was an accident, accidents happen, but I understand why he would feel so much immense guilt over it, too. So... just a really sad thing for everyone involved.
The last two people we have is Tim Thomerson as Lloyd Colton, who's the dad, who did a lot of television. And then Marcy Leeds as his little sister, Sarah. Really the thing that the two, when the bow breaks, which I haven't watched, but I know it's one of those, like, the nanny wants to steal the family movies. Oh. And I think she might be one of the little kids. But she was also one of the child actors in Beaches, which is, like, a very depressing, like... friendship movie.
Oh, You're the Wind Beneath My Wings came from that movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great song. But I remember trying to watch that movie with my sister, and I was like, and I think someone gets terminally ill, and I was like, I'm done.
Yeah. And I wanted to look up Eric Red real quick just to make sure. So it's not epilepsy, it's actually syncope it's commonly known as fading or passing out or loss of consciousness.
Oh.
Which is interesting. So it's short. Oh. It's a fast onset, short duration, spontaneous recovery, which is not something I was familiarized with. But
yeah. Do we want to do the rundown so we can get into spoilers?
So I'll do the rundown. Caleb Colton is a bored young man in a small Oklahoma town, whose life is forever changed when he meets beautiful May, who happens to be a vampire. Torn by his love for May and the nomadic lifestyle of her vampire family, and the love for his father and sister, Caleb must make a choice, and not everyone will make it out alive.
Da-da-da.
So, yeah, basically, like Katie says, it's like Caleb meets May. They drive around at night, and like the other thing is like he's so immersed with May, like I guess because she has this very like ethereal beauty about her, but it's also like she really does act fucking weird, and you think that would like trigger like, oh hey, this girl's not acting normal,
she's not like other girls,
but it's like instead like, whoa, she's not like other girls, and it's like he takes her to see his horse, which is like essentially his best friend, and she's like, horses don't like me, and it's like
the horse is like, fuck no, that's a fucking monster.
Yeah, it like gallops away, and still he's just like, and she's like, oh, it's the sun's about to come up, I need to go home, which leads into the whole, well, you know, kiss me and then I'll take you home. She bites him, she runs off, and this is actually kind of cool because like Caleb is like trying to like, he marks it as like, oh, I was just bit, well that was really weird, and then he's like,
yeah,
his car dies, he's gonna go home, and the stunt starts to come up, and you know, his father's a veterinarian, and his little sister's probably like 5 or 6, and he's walking across the field, and he starts like smoking. So.
Yeah, which I thought was an interesting thing. I also thought it was weird that the vampirism like takes place immediately.
Yeah.
Because like in most other ones, it takes them like 24 hours or like a few days.
Yeah.
But it's like immediate, you're a vampire. And yeah, he's like smoking, and his dad and his sister are like, I guess they had a late night. I don't know why the little sister, who's like 11, was like out at night with her dad all night either. But, you know, they come home.
Oh, I thought it was that they were like waking up and tending to the farm in the early hours.
Well, because they're driving in the truck and you see them slam the truck door. Because that's how you know they're a vet.
Because of the truck door.
Because the first time I watched this, I was like, why does he have blood transfusion equipment? Like, who just has that lying around? And then, like, I went back and I rewatched it. I was like, Oh, because he's a vet. Okay, yeah. Tight. But so anyways, I don't know. Maybe they were just up on the farm. I don't know. Anyways, they're coming home at the butt crack of dawn. He's running away from the butt crack of dawn. And then all of a sudden, there's just this random RV that just like grabs him. And so he's been kidnapped by May's vampire family.
Yeah.
Which they're not happy about.
Yeah, they don't realize yet that this is what's interesting. So I guess they kidnapped him because they're going to feed on him. And that's when they find out that May's turned him. And then they're all pissed. And they're like, well, he got 2 days to prove himself.
And basically, like, the whole crux is, so they're nomadic. And they take him far away. And then his dad, the sheriff, basically isn't that concerned. And so the dad takes the little sister, because I guess the mom has passed away or is gone. They never really mentioned that. And the dad's like, oh, I'm going to take your little sister and we're going to go find you. But they go in the opposite direction at first. So the whole movie is like the dad and the daughter looking for Caleb. And then they just want him to start murdering people. But like, he doesn't want to murder anybody. So May murders people for him and then lets him feed on her. But none of them are, like, fans of that.
Yeah.
Fans of that. So it's, like, it's weird. It's a weird dynamic. And honestly, it's kind of, like, rinse and repeat for a little bit. And then the bar scene happens.
Yeah.
And then the shootout scene happens. So it gets more interesting.
And the whole bar scene is actually, like Katie said, is really cool, like, the way they set it up. But basically, they go into a bar and Jesse is the one that, like, he asks the waitress for an empty glass. And when he does, he slits her throat to pour the blood in the glass. Yeah. And then from there, it's like, you know, no one else in that bar is getting out alive. But they do, like, essentially, Caleb does let a young man escape. And they're just, like, they're really pissed about that because this was, like, his chance to prove himself. Well, the young man brings them to the motel they're staying at. And a shootout ensures. And this was the thing in the script that I thought was really interesting. So in the movie, we know that the police officers die and stuff. But in the actual script, sorry, I just forgot how they referred to the young man. I'm so sorry, guys.
Caleb or the other
guy? The other guy. Oh, the teenage cowboy. So they call him the teenage cowboy in the script. So in the script, Caleb actually, after the whole, like, chase with the police and stuff, and in the original script, while the police are chasing, like, the van, like, Severin jumps out and, like, punches through the glass window and stuff. And I was like, yeah, this would have been very hard to accomplish in the 80s.
Yeah, but cool.
Not a dime a dozen scene in the 2000s. But all that to say, so the teenage cowboy ends up living, and Caleb kills him. And they, like, yeah. And I guess they were afraid that would make Caleb unlikable. So I guess they took that out of the final movie. But I thought it was really interesting because Caleb does essentially kill in the script.
Yeah, because, like, instead, how he wins their favor. Because they're, like, basically, like, you fucked us. He risks going out into the sun to get their blackout van, like blackout windows van, so they can escape, and he helps them escape, and they're like, oh, I guess you're not so bad. So then they go to a motel, and then they happen to be staying at the same motel that his dad and his little sister are at, and Homer, the little kid vampire, sees his sister and is like, hey, let's come watch some TV. Like, the TV's already done for the night, because way back when, cable, like, actually ended at, like, midnight.
Yeah.
And then that whole sequence is so quick, because he's just like, hey, that's my little sister Sarah. And he hugs her. And then his dad shows up. And then they, like, pull a gun on him. He's like, and then he shoots Jesse, who, like, regurgitates the bullet.
Yeah.
And then Sarah just opens the front door. And there's a bunch of light that pours in. And they're like, ah! And then they run away. And then, like, it's weird because it kind of goes back to, like, oh, well, that was something that happened. And then he doesn't tell his dad, I'm a vampire. But his dad's like, what happened? He's like, oh my god, you wouldn't believe me if I told you. But he's like hiding from the sun. And then his dad gets the bright idea, which I wonder why they don't try this in more vampire movies, to just give his son a blood transfusion. Which leads me to many questions. First of all, at first I was like, where the fuck did he get all the blood transfusion shit? But okay, he's a vet, so maybe they do blood transfusions on the animals. Okay, that's fine. But like, did he know for sure that they had the same blood type?
Oh, that's a good question.
Because blood types are a thing.
Yeah.
that happens. And I know that I have a friend whose mom's body, like, almost killed both her and her brother because they're a different blood type than their mom, and it's a not very compatible one.
Yeah.
And so, like, they had to have a C-section because it's the whole thing. I don't know if this is for sure, but I think most people are the same blood type as their mom, but not their dad.
And see,
so I was like, do you know that he can give you blood?
And it's funny that it's true because out of me and all my siblings have our mom, or, you know, my younger siblings have their mother's blood type, but I'm the only one my dad's children have his blood type.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was like, so are they the same blood type? Did you already know what his blood type is? Because, like, maybe because he's a vet, maybe he's more medically minded and he knows all of his kids' blood type. But, like, I was like, can you just put anybody's blood in? Or does, since you're doing a transfusion, does it just, like, change the blood type? But, like, I don't think that's how blood types work.
Yeah.
I think it's, because I think your organs would reject a blood that isn't the right blood type. Anyways, or maybe his dad's a universal donor. I don't know. But that was, like, I had so many questions about that. And then, like, I guess we'll spoil it. Later on, they also transfuse May to cure her. But I'm like, you don't know at all what May's blood type is.
Yeah.
So what is going on here?
It feels like more that they wanted, and I'm not saying blood transfusions are complicated. I know they are. But in terms of just writing the story, it just feels they were looking for more of a cop-out for a possibly happy ending.
Also, like, the way they're doing it, it makes it sound like they're basically completely emptying this person out.
Yeah.
Of blood, because, like, they're basically using an IV drip.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that doesn't even pump. I don't know. I should have gotten my mom to watch this scene and tell me her medical opinion, because I fucking love getting my nurse mother's medical opinion on movies that, like, don't do medicine correctly. Because I think that would be too slow to pump into your body. I feel like when they do transfusions, they actually pump it, yeah, don't they? Also, okay, so the whole reason, like, they go, so he gets home. And then they're trying to go back and live life normal. But, like, a pack of vampires literally kidnapped you, like, a month ago. And they're, like, hanging out, and all their windows are open in their house. And maybe they don't have air conditioning, and I get that. But if a pack of vampires had just kidnapped your son a month prior, why would you leave all the windows and doors unlocked? Because they fucking kidnap his little sister while May, like, distracts him. And I was like, what an idiot. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But I was like, you're just asking for it at this point, man. Come on.
Well, he's asleep on the couch while Caleb goes and saves Sarah, too.
So, I know. Like, and then it's a fun little, like there's, like, a truck and, like, it's like a vehicle.
He learns to jackknife
battle.
It. He learns to jackknife it because of the trucker that May kills earlier from the feed on. So it's like, oh, The trucker comes back because, like, yeah, he takes the cab and, like, jackknives, and that's how he kills Severin, which is, like, okay, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. It was funny, like, you're like, he learns how to jackknife it. If you didn't know we were talking about a truck, it would sound very dirty.
Oh, I didn't even think about it.
I was like, he's jacking it?
How you can tell I have a pretty innocent mind, because I honestly didn't even think about that.
But, no, yeah. So he kills Severin with that car, and then they end up, like, shooting out all, like, the blackout windows in the car with Lee, Jesse, and Diamondback. And then, so then they, like, burn to death. And they're like, we love you. I love you, too. Oh, my God. And then Homer is running towards Sarah, and he bursts into flames. And then they all explode, which I thought was a hilarious and fun way to kill off vampires.
It's pretty funny.
They all just explode. So that's the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, and then they May's still okay.
Yeah.
Because she helps save Sarah. That's the thing. She goes and helps them kidnap Sarah. And then she's like, oh, but I changed my mind. I'm going to help you save her. And then they're like, blood transfusion?
And what's funny is that in it's effective the way it's written in the script. But then you're like, yeah, that's kind of pointless. So it's like, after they literally save Caleb and May with a blood transfusion, it's like they walk out into the sunlight and Sarah starts to follow them and her hand burns and she draws it back real quick. That's how the script ends, right? And it's like, yeah, it's like it's implied that Homer bit her and she's a vampire. But it's like, but literally, you just saved your two characters with a blood transfusion. So it'd be like, oh, you can just save Sarah at one, too. Everyone gets a blood transfusion.
Yeah. So,
and you get a blood transfusion. And you get a blood transfusion. Everybody gets a blood transfusion. I'm Oprah.
Yeah.
Not really.
I thought it would... No, I'm kind of dark. I'm sorry, guys. I'll admit it. But I thought it would have been better if, like, they had... If they were going to go with the route that Sarah had been bitten, if they had were able to save Caleb, and then maybe they weren't able to save May, and to find out that Sarah had become one, it would be a 50-50 chance of her being saved.
Also, Sarah might be the same blood type because they're in the same family.
Yeah.
And we don't fucking know what fucking blood type May is.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, it literally ends with, like, Caleb is hugging May, and it does, like, this weird freeze frame thing that you're like, yeah, this is definitely in the 80s. And it's like, it's a decent movie with, like, to me, an overall disappointing, like, final couple of minutes. And I mean, I'm an optimist. I don't like there being, like, negative endings or pessimistic endings, but I felt it was, like, cobbled together.
It's very, like, fun in the middle and, like, adventure and action-y, and that's all fun and good with the vampires, because they are kind of fun, even though they're evil. They have a lot more chemistry together, and they have a lot more dynamic personalities, so it's very interesting. But it's bookended with these saccharine love story sappy things that doesn't really fit with the rest of the story. Because it starts out with, like, the lovey-dovey, like, look at the stars, oh my god. And sorry, because they have, like, really bad southern accents. And then, like, the kissing, whatever, sensualness. And at the end, they're like, oh my god, look at the sunshine. And I don't know, I just, like, I think I'm happy for May, but I don't like Caleb. I don't like him one bit. I didn't like him this whole... The only redeeming thing is that he never murdered anybody except for vampires who were trying to murder him. But that is literally his only redeeming quality, because he's a pest who coerced a woman into kissing him so he would give her a ride home after he offered to give her a ride home. And he's an immature little jackass little boy. And I didn't like him. But I like his dad and his sister.
Yeah.
And I like May.
I like that he loves his sister, too. Because he picked his sister over.
Okay, so we'll give him, like, you know, that.
Yeah.
He has two redeeming qualities.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, like, I don't know. I just, like, I think, like, my biggest con is that I don't like the good guy. And I actually like the bad guys better in this movie.
Yeah.
Which is why I would be okay with a darker ending. You know? I don't know. Like, in The Lost Boys, I liked the brother. And I liked Corey Feldman's character. And the other little boys and stuff. I mean, both the Coreys. I liked all the Coreys and the other kids. Like, that was all fun and good. And you could tell that the brother really didn't want to be bad. And that he wanted to stay with his family. And there's also a really cool twist in that movie that I won't spoil here. So, like, I, like, understand why people like that one more. Because there is kind of still a dark ending, but it's still a happy ending. But there's a lot more... They had a bigger budget, you could tell.
Yeah, definitely.
So they could do cooler stuff with the vampires. But I do think, like, the vampires are better actors in this movie.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think then, like... I'm sorry, Kiefer Sutherland, but especially, like, young Kiefer Sutherland's kind of just... Ah, I'm a badass. He wasn't, like, honestly that scary to me. But pros... I'll stop being negative... I do like the music. It's not really my taste, but I think it fits the aesthetic and the time period.
Yeah.
And I liked that it was mostly practical effects, and the practical effects really looked gross.
Oh.
And there's a lot of blood.
Fun fact real quick. So the score was composed by Tangerine Dream, which that sounded familiar to me, but I didn't really know. They were founded in 67. They're a German electronic band. But they composed music for Thief Legend, Firestar, Sorcerer, and Vision Quest. So I was like, oh, Firestar, that's why they sound familiar.
Yeah.
So yeah, the score is pretty cool in this movie. It's a little subtle at points, but I do like the electronics, so.
Yeah, and I'm not a big synth person, but I think it works for this. And I like the vampires. I like the bar sequence. I like the action. But yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think? What are your, any pros or cons that stuck out to you?
Nothing too, I guess, crazy or different from what you said, really. But, like, I do,
I do like the genre blending. And I like the genre blending at a time when you really maybe did not see that as much in films. Mm-hmm. I think the cinematography is pretty. I do feel like the lighting was really important. And I know particularly the lighting at night was really important to them because they're like, we need to light them in a way that still look like night in the film.
No, they shot it at night.
Well, no, I'm talking about like...
There was one day for night they did, but everything else was night for night.
No, I know they shot it at night. I meant that they wanted the actual like film quality to look like how you would see someone at night. And I forgot they had to use either it was like a special lens or a special type of lighting to achieve that. So there was obviously a lot of love and care that went into like getting the environment right for this movie.
I think she's a good filmmaker. Mm-hmm. I think the film is technically good. I think it's a lot of like story stuff that is just lacking.
I would say more my cons are, well, I also my pros is I do like the nomadic vampires. I think they're really, really cool. I was wondering, I was thinking about like what this may have inspired, like what it could have been inspired by and what it could have possibly inspired. So I'm like, if it's inspired by Interview with the Vampire, I wonder if this movie also went on to inspire Dr. Sleep, because we also see That's what I was kind of wondering, because you do see some similarities between the True Knot and the vampires in this movie. And I thought that was cool. So it's like, even though some of it may seem like cliche, it's interesting to think what could have been spawned from someone seeing this film in the 80s.
Yeah. And I think it's a good first film. I think it's a pretty complicated first film that she did successfully make. I don't think, you know, you can only cast... Who auditions? And apparently the Caleb guy didn't even really want to be in this movie. I think it's a good afternoon watch.
Yeah.
The first time I watched it, I turned it on like on a Saturday afternoon while I was like cleaning the house. And I was just like, oh, okay. But like, I feel like that's about the status I can give it.
I could see it being like a good like midnight movie too. Like if you saw this like with a theater full of people and you could laugh at some of like the weird dialogue choices or like Bill Paxton just being crazy.
Yeah.
I think that...
That part is fun.
Yeah, I think that would be like kind of cool. And it's interesting. I should have asked my dad if he watched this one and what his thoughts were on it, because I also wonder if like watching it in the 80s would have been a different experience than watching it in 2024.
Maybe.
So...
Maybe like pre-Twilight and pre-True Blood, pre-vampire saturation.
Yeah, very true.
You know.
But what did you give Near Dark on a scale of 1 to 10?
A 6.
A 6, okay.
I didn't like it that much.
That's okay.
I didn't hate it. I don't hate it. I think you should watch it once for the bar scene. But yeah, second watch I was... Like, meh. I think it was a 7 before my second watch. What about you?
I actually was going between a 6.5 and a 7. And I gave it a 7 just because of the nostalgia aspect of it. I was like, I think it's not like my favorite movie I've ever seen. But I think it's cool seeing what a Academy Award winning director, what was already kind of playing in their mind when they were early in their career. And I like the kind of lore that maybe went into future vampire films. I thought that was cool. Do you have a Grindhouse Girls rating for it?
I actually had a few, weirdly. I did have rated E for exploding vampires and eviscerated bar patrons, which was fun. But Bill Paxton had some really good quotes. Mm-hmm. So one was rated F for finger licking good and 40 miles of rough road, because I thought that was funny. But I think my favorite is rated S for smash glass, sliced throats, and sacrificial sunrise.
That's good. I had also rated S, but it came from page 91 of the script in reference to Severin. And it's rated S for savagely sardonic smiles.
Oh.
And I think they literally say in the script, Severin's savagely sardonic smiles. And I'm like, I cannot say that. That's a tongue twister. I also had rated C for campers, candy, and combustion.
Mmm.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Which one do we want to go with?
I like your S. I think that sounds good.
Okay. The exploding vampires was fun, though.
Yeah.
I hear the kitty cat.
Oh, that's Canada. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's Candy Cans.
Well, that was Near Dark.
That was Near Dark. Go stream it on Criterion. And if we
If we didn't talk about something that you guys noticed in the film, please let us know. Drop us a message. We love to hear from y'all.
Yes, please do. And next week, so we're going to go, since we had to skip a week because of my illness last week because we couldn't talk, we're just going to go straight ahead next week instead of doing sidetracks. We're going to do Antichrist. Because then we have our anniversary episode coming up, so we didn't want to, like, mess up the schedule for that. And that's going to be very big and special, and we're very excited about what's going to happen with that. Because it's going to be very different. But we're going to be doing Antichrist, which is by Lars von Trier, who's kind of a controversial director. I personally have seen Nymphomaniac and thought it was kind of trash, but artsy trash. And this movie, especially when it came out when we were, like, in college, it was a movie I wanted to watch, but, like, I couldn't find anywhere because streaming wasn't as available. But I remember reading the entire plot on Wikipedia and just being, like, fascinated by how dark this movie gets and how weird this movie gets. And people were saying it was misogynistic, but then also, like, it was creepy and too sexual and there's a bunch of weird stuff. So basically, if you don't know what Antichrist is, and this is for someone who hasn't watched it yet, there's a couple, they're grieving after a loss, and the husband is a therapist, and they never name the characters, so it's very, like, symbolic or whatever, and they go out to their cabin in the middle of the woods to, like, heal, but, like, things get real weird and sexual and violent, and, yeah, and it's Willem Dafoe and Charlotte Gainsborough. And Charlotte Gainsborough is the main character in Nymphomaniac 1 and 2. And Willem Dafoe, we know him. We love him. And it is streaming on Criterion and Tubi and Canopy, which Canopy with a K is the U.S. library system's streaming service. So if you have a library card, you can sign up for that for free. So I'm a little nervous to watch this one.
Yeah, I'm excited. I watched this one with Taylor probably mm-hmm. like a year after we started dating, and that was like 10 years ago now, and he still will occasionally bring it up, so I know, like, it definitely had an effect on him. I will be honest, I am not the biggest Lars von Trier fan.
Me neither.
We can talk more about that.
Oh, yeah.
Let's just say that John C. Reilly quit one of Lars's films, though, because they slaughtered a donkey.
So, yeah, so we'll be watching Antichrist. Don't worry, it'll be the week after Easter, so it's okay. We won't be studying that during Easter. But yeah, and we'll see you next week. Sorry I still sound crazy, and I hope my coughing didn't hurt anybody's eardrums. And I'm apologizing to Ryan in case you have to silence me. I tried so hard not to cough into the mic. But hopefully next week I'll be back to normal. Because, like, I feel much better than I sound. So that's good. But I hope you all are taking care of yourselves. The allergies right now, at least in the southeast of the U.S., is abysmal and, like, catastrophic. So take care of yourself. Get some Zyzol. Get some Zyrtec. Get some Benadryl. And make sure you take care of yourself and get to the doctor if you're not feeling well so that you can get better. Because I know for me it's been, like, a month of being sick off and on, and which is very unusual for myself. So not fun, and I don't wish it on anyone else. And be careful. I know this will air after Easter, but I hope you guys had a good Easter weekend. And if you celebrate, or if you're just off work, and if you're doing spring break or vacationing, be careful out there. Drive safely. And we love y'all, and thank you for listening.
Yeah. Thank you all for listening to Echo Katie. Also, spade and neuter your babies, your fur babies.
Yes.
Alabama spade and neuter, because we are in Alabama. Alabama spade and neuter just have released a grant where basically low-income families who were on Medicaid or government assistant could get their pet spayed for $20. And basically, within like a day, it was like they were completely booked up, which makes me very happy because it is
awesome.
Yeah, people obviously were stepping up wanting to get their animals spayed and neutered. So I love that. I hope that this can happen again for families who do want to help, but just unfortunately they may be struggling. So it's a great thing. I'll look into it. If you are in the state of Alabama, it's $105 for anyone.
to spade and neuter your animals. So if you're looking for something cheap, hey, slide into my DMs. I'll find ways to help you.
Yeah.
I'm all about trying to make our lives and our community a better place, even if it's in small ways. So yeah. We are going to see, this episode will not air, like Katie said, until after Easter, but we're going to go see Late Night with the Devil. So look forward to that, hopefully maybe on a future episode. I'm not gonna say any more than that. We love you guys. Take care of yourselves and one another. Mm-hmm. We appreciate each and every one of you, and we just look forward to seeing you next time. Same spoopy time, same spoopy channel.
Stay spoopy, y'all.
Bye. Katie, hope you feel better.
Bye, Britt. Already feeling better. Yay. At least we got to record. Yay! Bye! Bye-bye, all the puppies.
All the puppies say bye, too.
And the kitties.
Say bye, Ryan.
Bye.
The Grindhouse Girls podcast is a production by Katie Dale and Britt Ray. Our editor is N.R. Moody. All music used is royalty-free and can be found in our annotations. You can follow us on all of our socials. And if you have any comments, questions, or just want to say hey, our email is contactus@grindhousegirlspod.com. Thanks for listening.